Dating After Divorcing a Narcissist? It's part trauma recovery, part comedy special. From gaslighting to ghosting, Kimber's got a story that you need to hear. Quick heads up, friends. I partnered with Paul Bauer from the Come On Man podcast, and he's got four killer resources that can seriously up your dating game, from building confidence to mastering conversations to the dead bedroom syndrome. It's all stuff I stand behind. And yes, I get a small commission if you grab one. You're not just supporting yourself, you're supporting the show too. Win-win, right? Check the links in the show notes. Now on to the show. Welcome back to another episode of Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew, and I am very excited to introduce today's guest. Today I have Kimber Foster. Hello, Kimber. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. All right, so let's tell everybody what Kimber has done. Kimber has written a book called The Year or Year of the Thorns. Is it The Year of the Thorns?
Year of Thorns.
Year of Thorns. Okay. And she also has a little handbook called The Divorce Checklist. And she's got a blog and a website, and she helps and coaches people. And her specialty, and she can clear this up, is narcissism. So I'm going to ask Kimber to take it from there.
Yeah, my book, Year of Thorns, What to Expect When Divorcing a Narcissist, is essentially my story. It was my journal of my year of trying to break free from a toxic relationship. And after my divorce, I was just trying to figure out, like, how did I get to this place in my life? I was a shell of the person I once was. So I started reading, and I realized I'd read this verbally abusive book by Patricia. And I said, oh my gosh, that's me. And I kept reading. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I think my ex was a narcissist. And this is before the N word, I call it, was mainstream like it is today.
Right. It's everywhere today. Yeah.
You know, and it's really overused. I mean, there's different levels on the spectrum, but he was actually diagnosed with a severe personality. We went through psych evals and all that during our divorce. So he's diagnosed. But as I did my research, I realized my story wasn't unique. It was textbook, and it started making sense. And then I went back through my journal and I said, oh, this is an example of gaslighting or mirror effect or projection. And it all came together and made sense. So in my book, I identified these 17 manipulative tactics of a narcissist. And so it's kind of a self-help, a thriller, a journal, but it was really meant to help others that may be going through a breakup or thinking about getting divorced or breaking up with a person that they're in a toxic relationship with. And it's kind of a tool in the armor they might need to prepare for the battle that lay ahead, because it's a battle.
Would you like to start with how you met him and how long ago?
Sure. I mean, in a nutshell, we met in college. I got my Mrs. degree. And we've been together 30 years, married 27. And we have three beautiful children. You know, it was a fun ride, but I said it was the perfect Facebook life. But there were some really ugly stories and pictures behind the scenes.
Want to share any? Yeah, I can imagine in a 30-year marriage, it was just one after the other. But give us some examples of maybe some of, and then we can go into some of the, I think you had mentioned, or I saw somewhere about the red flags. How do you recognize a narcissist? So you married your college sweetheart, but when did you start seeing the red flags that you probably missed, ignored?
The very first year. You know, but I was married and I felt a really need strong obligation to my wedding vows. Nobody in my family had ever been divorced and I was in love. But yeah, there was red flags from the first year. Cheating on me, anger issues, throwing things. And then I found out he had lied to me and gambled away all the money we got from our wedding and gifts. Yeah. And he's trying to, yeah. So that, and I said, this is not what I signed up for. And he was working in the bars, restaurants as a general manager. I was working a normal 8-to-5 job. And I said, you know, we've got to make a change. And to his credit, he went out and got a job in the corporate world. And we moved to Iowa, which was a long ways away. And thus, I became the wife of a salesman after that.
Okay.
So we moved everywhere. But we moved like every 3 years. So I would switch jobs and switch jobs. And eventually, you know, he was the primary breadwinner. And I just kind of followed him along everywhere we went. And we lived internationally for 10 years too. But it was perfect scenario for a narcissist because I was isolated from my friends and family.
Yep.
So, you know, he was my world. And then when we started having children, you know, it was all about them.
Let's go back. You kind of said something and we kind of skipped right over it. And I'm very familiar with this and a lot of people are, but in the first year, you said he cheated on you.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find out? And why? I hate to ask this. If you find out, because I did this, because when I found out she was cheating, I stayed. Why did you forgive him?
It was actually before we got married, when we were dating.
Okay, boy.
And then, you know, and he swore it would never happen again. And, you know, and then we got engaged and then got married. But again, once a cheater, always a cheater. I mean, there's a reason why people say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he swore. The thing with a narcissist, they're so convincing. And there were points in our marriage, and I'm skipping ahead many years, he would have nail marks literally on his back. And I'd be like, what is that? And I would ask and question him, and he would come back at me so hard and flip it. And the next thing you know, I'm making apologies.
Yep.
And he's calling me insecure. And he told me it was from the weight bench. I'm like, seriously? Yeah, I knew deep down, but it's like, oh, I wanted to believe that he wasn't cheating. The kids call him cheating, but he always had an excuse. And to this day, he still never admitted it.
Of course not. No. In my experience, and I've had this podcast started with a relationship about a woman that was on the spectrum. I'm not going to label her. You said he was officially diagnosed, so you can't dispute that. But in my case, when I found the same things, I didn't find claw marks, but I found other physical evidence. And some of my regular listeners know what I'm talking about. But there was physical evidence, I'm able to say it, in the private areas where you could tell that there was somebody else in there. And I got the same thing you got. It was like complete gaslighting. Yes. And when they turn it around, you find yourself apologizing and like, oh, I am so sorry. They're master manipulators at this. It's amazing. So
it is. And you'll never win. I mean,
it's
they're so good at their verbal communication that they just want to silence you. That's it. I mean, and you can't win an argument with a narcissist.
No.
They twist your words and then they start twisting your reality. And then you're like on this crazy wheel and you're going, what's happening?
Yeah, you're on that hamster wheel. And then they have you second guessing yourself. Did I really see that? Is it maybe it is me? Mm-hmm. There was a point that she got me to go on medication because she said, if you don't stop this, I'm going to leave you. And of course, I went to a shrink and they put me on medications. That was her way of, I guess, controlling me and making me think it was really me. I hope that didn't happen to you. No.
Of course it did.
Oh.
That's what they all do.
Yeah.
They say, you're crazy. You're overreacting. You're making, you know, a mountain out of a molehill. You're too sensitive. You ever hear that? Run for the hills. Because it's somebody that's not validating your feelings. Instead, it's them establishing their superiority. They'll never take accountability. And that's just them projecting right back at you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Bringing back some pretty vivid memories that I had. Tell us a little bit about I do want to get to some of the red flags that you talked about, but tell us a little bit about this divorce checklist handbook that you made.
So nothing could have prepared me for the battle that laid ahead. I mean, I made the mistake of telling him I wanted out of the marriage. We were living overseas. I had nowhere to go. I couldn't just pack up my kids and leave. And he attacked me physically and verbally. and told me if I ever left him, he would destroy me. It was to the point where that mask came off. It was like Jekyll and Hyde. And I was scared for my life. And it wasn't until we got back to the States that I left. But nothing could have prepared me. So I scoured the internet. I'm one of those people, like, I don't do anything halfway. And so I was researching. I couldn't find anything like what you need to include in your divorce when you're divorcing a narcissist. We went through so much money in attorney fees because, like I said, again, he had to win at all cost. It didn't matter the effects it had on the children. It didn't matter. He even lost his job process because he was so hell-bent on destroying me because a narcissist's biggest fear is abandonment. And that's exactly what I did. I left him. So I created this, and I'm going to offer it to your viewers and listeners for free.
Oh, at thank the end you.
Of it and click yeah. on it. But basically, it's armor that you need if you're going to break out of a toxic relationship. So it talks about protecting your assets, what you need to do financially, having a safe place, which is really important because my book, A Year of Thorns, is about my year of breaking free. He wouldn't move out of the house. So we lived in the same house for a year, which was a living hell. My bedroom was my prison. I mean, it was just awful. So this checklist is the armor that you might need to help you get through it. But I really like the part in here when it comes to children, because in the United States, you know, we have that canopy for child support, which is what? Your basic food, shelter, and clothing. Well, if you're divorcing a narcissist, they'll go, well, it wasn't in the judgment of divorce. I'm not paying for it, you know, or they'll reverse and say, well, I never agreed to pay for that. And then you have to find all the documentation. I went back to court so many times because he refused to pay. So the more clear you are on those items when it comes to the kids, the better, especially because you're protecting the children. Because with a toxic relationship like that, they use the children as weapons and money as weapons.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there's so many things that aren't covered under that canopy, like cell phones. Or what if the cell phone breaks, or sport equipment, or clubs, or even as the kids get older, like who pays for driver's training, who pays for prom, weddings even. So it's really important that you have all those things documented and agreed upon when you're going through the process, especially to protect the kids.
Yeah.
And your wallet, because the attorneys, I got tired going back to court. And actually, the judge said to my ex, if you come back again, refusing to pay something for your kids, I'm going to double it next time. I shut them down because the judge got tired of seeing us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see, because you're not going to see it often. When a narcissistic is standing in front of an authoritative figure, such as the judge, mm-hmm. they tend to not, although if they're really, I guess, diagnosed, like, did he ever challenge the judge or did he ever try to wiggle out of something?
He did many times. At one point, he knew I was writing the book. This is after our divorce. We're fighting over something financially again. And he was asking the judge, he's like, I'm going to sue her. She's writing a book about me. And judge said, are you really asking me for advice how to sue the mother of your children who's sitting right here that you've abused for so many years? She said she has a right to tell her story if it's the truth. But I change all the names. I change our names to protect those. It's not meant in any way to, I want to be clear.
Yeah.
It's not meant in any way to diminish him or every, it's meant to help people. And it helped me. Like it was a therapeutic. So it's not meant to take him through, drag him through the mud.
But of course he's going to see it that way. Yeah.
Because it's all about them. It's
yeah.
always about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I even got a check in the mail with a handwritten letter the other day. And it says, I'm coming after you. I'm going to sue you. This is, you know, slander, blah, blah, blah.
Well, wait a minute. The judge, if you're writing a book and number one, you're under a pen name, right? So Kimber is, we can say this, Kimber is not your real name. And you don't use real names in the book, right? Correct. And so, see,
the judge said I could, if it's the truth, I had the right to tell my story.
Right. Absolutely. But you're not, this is kind of the name of my podcast used to be, it's, and it kind of still is, the Anonymous Andrew Podcast. It is now Digital Dating, but it went through a couple changes. But when I initially started it, I did it under anonymity because I was telling my story. of a relationship, very similar, not marriage, but it was a relationship with somebody who was on the NPD spectrum. And I felt that it would be the right thing to do to just, so I became anonymous. So if anybody didn't know who I, if they knew who I was, they could look on my Facebook page and see maybe who the other person was. So it's, I think you're doing the right thing, but to the other, to the narcissist, they're never going to see it that way. So no, interesting. So where, so where, so you officially divorced how many years now?
7.
Wow. Very good.
7 glorious.
That's 7 years since the papers were signed. Okay. Yep. And he's still haunting you.
Well, it's not something you can get over in a day. No, they already had a replacement before I was out the door. A narcissist has to have that constant companionship.
And it's called the supply. Narcissists have a supply.
Exactly. But us, I was conditioned for so many years. And I lost the person who I once was. You know, my self-esteem was an all-time low. Plus, I'd been out of the dating scene for 30 years. It was really difficult. So I wrote the book, which was really therapeutic for me to help me understand, again, how I got to that place in my life. And also, a lot of it's about forgiveness. Forgiving myself, you know, that I didn't leave sooner. But I know there was nothing I could have done. I couldn't have changed anything. I did the best I could with what I could. And then forgiving him. I mean, for so long, I had so much anger and resentment. And now I get letters like that from him and I just laugh. I'm just like, God, please have like kindness in his heart and soul. But I know he'll never change and I will never change him.
When we're teenagers or adolescents and going through high school and college, we're taught a lot of things about life. And, you know, you get sex ed, you get psychology, theology, sociology, all that stuff. But nobody teaches you to be on the lookout for a narcissist, right? It's just, especially 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, that term was barely even used. So what, I'll consider you an expert in NPD. What would you say, because this is a dating podcast and there are people out there that are dating, they're on dating app. We'll get to that in a moment. What would be some initial signs right off the bat, either in the bio of the dating app, or let's say you meet somebody at a bar or you maybe you're at a social event and you start talking to this person in hindsight. And that, because a lot of times we're blind. Love is blind. You find somebody attractive and even said it yourself. He was cheating on you and then you married him anyway. Yeah. So you saw all those red flags.
I did.
So give us a few examples of what might one, and I think statistically more men are narcissists than women, but both genders can be.
Met a lot of both.
Yeah. What are some signs that we can look for early on?
Well, initially, like if you're at a bar on your first date, if all they do is talk about themselves, that's a red flag.
Okay.
You know, a narcissist has a very huge ego. You know, they always have to be superior. So if they make everything about them, that's a big red flag. You know, they have an over grandiose sense of superiority. So that's one. That's pretty easy to spot. The second would be if they talk bad about their exes, because a narcissist never takes accountability. They're always the victim. So if they say, my ex was crazy, my ex did this, my ex did that, my question would be is like, what part did you play in it?
Right.
Yeah. Like, if they don't take any accountability, that's another huge red flag. So those are two really easy to see right off the bat. And then the other one's not so much, you know, once they get you in, I say, you know, it's the love bombing phase. They put on this mask and they morph into the person that you want them to be.
Right.
They're amazing. Yep. They get you to open up and tell you your dreams and hopes and your insecurities and your vulnerabilities. They draw you in. They feed on that. They put on this mask and they're the most amazing person you've ever met. You know, showering you with gifts and everything. Mm-hmm. And then they try to get you to sleep with them. And that, for especially us empaths and people like that, you know, it's another form of bonding that draws us in deeper. And once they've love bombed you and you think they're the greatest person in the world, that's when they start to flip it on you and do the gaslighting and things like that to maintain their superiority and kind of put you in your place. So I always say, if things seem too good to be true, when they say, oh, you're the love of my life, I've never felt this way before, we're the perfect match, that's a red flag too, because nobody's
perfect. No, not at all.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, let's jump. So let's jump right into my favorite topic, is the dating scene in today's world. I think you told me off mic that you are single and you are dating.
Yes.
So what does that look like for you? So you're, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you said you're on a lot of dating apps, which I am too.
Yeah.
What, how is it going for you? Because I'm finding it to be just horrific out there.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I didn't date for the first year after my divorce. I needed really time to heal and then and all that. But I hadn't dated for 30 years. So I still remember the first time I went on a date and walked into a bar, I nearly had a heart attack. It was so nerve-wracking. And then I joined one of those special apps that, you know, it was exclusive and it was a lot of money and they were supposed to set me up with five perfect people. Oh my God, it was horrible. It was a waste of my money. And then I started doing more the traditional route, you know, going to the bars and stuff. But I soon realized you're not going to meet that perfect guy at the bar. It's just, you know, it's just usually guys who want to hook up. So then I went to the dating apps and I said to you before the show, I don't do anything half-assed. I'm on Bumble, Tinder, Match. And I honestly go on and off because I get exhausted because it takes so much time and energy.
It's called dating fatigue or swiping fatigue. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I've made some friends from it. So that's good. And I'm an interior designer. A lot of times these guys need a decorator. So that's really good too.
Yes, we do. We do need them.
So I want to say I should be the divorced dad decorator. Yeah. I actually wanted to start my own podcast about, you know, dating in my age and the second time around and all my girlfriends and I talking about all our bad dates and things that have happened. Because it's really funny. I mean, you got to be able to laugh at this stuff, honestly.
Tell me a either horrific or funny dating story. You must have a few.
Oh, I do. Gosh. One guy, talked to him, FaceTime like this, seemed like a great guy, just built a house, wanted me to come check it out. And I'm kind of leery about going to somebody's house for a first date. So that was problem number one I should have done. He said he's going to pick up a pizza. I get there. I'm on time because I'm always on time. He pulls in just before me with the pizza and he's standing there and he has a giant wet spot like on his jeans, like he had peed his pants. And I thought, well, maybe he spilled something in the car and I'm too nice to even point it out. You know, I go in, he tours around the house. He doesn't say anything. And I'm just going, oh my God, this guy's peed his pants. And it was just so uncomfortable. I had to leave. I didn't know what to do. I was so uncomfortable. And afterwards, he's like, you know, you left so fast. And I thought things were going good. And I was kind of ghosting him after that. And when I finally, and he goes, what was it? And I go, well, it looked like you peed your pants and I didn't want to embarrass you. And so I didn't say anything. And then he just went off on me. Like, you saw that mask come off and he just went crazy on me. And I was like, ooh, that was a luck of the draw that happened.
Did he admit that he had peed in his pants? Yeah.
Yeah. But even if he could have just said, I spilled or had an accident, I'm going to go change. I'll be right back. But it was like the elephant in the room.
And didn't want to talk. That's very strange. That is very strange.
So, and then my girlfriend ended up like talking to him and I go, oh, and she's totally, she's going out with this. And I go, oh my God, that's Mr. Pee Pee Pants. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's his nickname, Mr. Pee Pee Pants. So I got names, but you know, God bless him. I mean, he must've been so embarrassed. I just wish, you know, I had the courage to say something, but that's me. That's that empath people pleaser in me. Like my ex, I could never say anything because they would attack me. And when I did finally tell him what happened, he attacked me.
He did exactly what you were afraid he was going to do. So thank God you didn't do it in person because it could have gone ugly.
It could have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was at his house and yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I made the right call.
So it's safe to say you never helped him with interior design. No. Okay. Yeah.
There's one.
I start a podcast and have the girlfriends come on and then invite women to come on with these stories. The horror stories that I'm hearing and that I have gone through myself, like you said, you have to laugh at them sometimes to get.
But the thing is, now I recognize. I know if someone's fake, like most of the time, they're these guys overseas, they're secret agents or they're working the yep. oil rig. Yep. And then they try to get you to go on emails and send pictures, and then they steal all your stuff. That's a red flag. Here's another one. I make sure that when I'm looking at their pictures, I see them smiling, because I actually showed up on a date and he didn't have his front teeth.
No kidding.
No front teeth. Not that, you know, I understand things happen, but that's something I would have liked beforehand.
It would have been nice to know that beforehand. Yeah.
So it's important that we do our due diligence. But, you know, and I get my numbers out right away because I want to hear a guy's voice. I want to talk to him. I'd like to FaceTime him if I can, you know, to make sure
that
real. They have their teeth.
I'm going to give you two tips from the Anonymous Andrew Dating Podcast. Number one, you should have a second phone number. Never give out your real phone number, because I can Google your phone number and find out a lot about you. Because if you've had that number 10, 15, 20 years, or whenever cell phones started, there's a lot of information. So, and I've admitted this to my audience. When I go on dates before, or a woman gives me her number, I Google it. If I find no information, then it tells me that she has either given me a second, like Google Voice will give you a free phone number, and there's a lot of apps. So be careful about giving out that first and phone number.
Yeah, it was an easy Google search. I said, ooh, I don't know if that's good or bad, but
yeah,
an open book. So
well, but you want to be careful, because some of the creeps, like Mr. Pee Pee Pants, you know, if he knew where you lived, he's gonna come pee on your front lawn or something. You just don't want that.
Oh, I know.
The second thing is, and I agree with you 100%, have a FaceTime meeting before you go on that first date, because like you said, the oil rig scam, they're all over the internet. I have a fellow podcaster, and her whole podcast is about the romance scams, and she's really good at what she does at spotting them. But if you have a video like iPhone, FaceTime, Google Meet, or whatever, you get to see what you're getting. And maybe you would have seen the man missing his front teeth at that point, because he would have had to open his mouth. And listen, I need some dental work done. I don't have to go off on a tangent here, but that, you know, I have health insurance, but the dental is not that great. So your dental can be white cleaning the teeth and x-rays, and that's it, you know, and the insurance will cover that. But when you need implants and bridges, and especially at our age, you need some more work done. I saw an article today in one of the men's magazines that this guy had to pay $55,000 for a set of teeth.
It's like,
But
I just prefer my men to have, you know, all their front teeth.
Yeah, and that's not unreasonable. That's not
most of the time.
I have a couple in the back, but that's I'll always be upfront about my alcoholism. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I have 10 years of sobriety, and I may not blurt that out at the first, but they need to know that mm-hmm. because I find that there's a lot of women that are leaving relationships or marriages because their husbands are alcoholics. So it can work both ways. Sometimes if they hear that I'm in recovery, they're happy about that. So I don't have to worry about him being an alcoholic, but you should have some significant time, like 10, 15, 20 years. If you have 1 year sobriety, don't date that person. So they're not ready to date yet anyway. Anything? Tell us some more about the dating apps. So you're on Bumble, you're on Tinder. Why are you on Tinder?
Well, I mean, I know everybody said that's a hookup one, but I don't see it as that. Is it?
No. Well, they're doing a lot to change that image.
I wanted to have sex after the first date. No, I'm kidding.
Well, but it was designed in 2014 or so, just so you could swipe in New York City and meet somebody that was half, around the block that they get laid on the first day, within the first half hour. I think they're doing a lot to change the image of Tinder. I think they want to.
Yeah, I don't see it as that, but I'm not really on that one much. I do more like Facebook dating I really like Bumble because it gives me that security. But I hate having to pay to see who likes you it's just so much time. Like, who has the time to keep up with all these? And you talk to somebody a couple conversations and then you never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, am I not entertaining enough, funny enough? You know, you question, like, but they just probably found somebody better.
Well, that goes, no, don't say that. You got to be confident. As a male, I would imagine, and I have a couple of female friends, I would imagine that the women have a lot more in their inbox. So in the morning you wake up, you probably have 50 guys liking you, matching you, or sending you messages. And when I do that, and I'm on Bumble, So I get matched daily with people.
I have like 700 in my inbox right now. I don't have time.
You don't have time. And if you don't answer within 24 hours, the match expires, right? They do allow the guys to extend the 24 hours to 48 hours. But when I don't hear back from the woman, I either figure that she's got 700 likes and she just can't weed through them. And, you know, it's too much. Yeah. Like you said, it's too much work.
But I try to focus just on a couple. But for example, I had a Bumble date. It's supposed to be tomorrow. Okay. And I was out with my girlfriends yesterday and I saw him at a restaurant here in town. And I'm like, I think that's him. So I went and said hi. And he was on a date.
Oh, my God. The date that you had tomorrow night was on an afternoon date.
Yeah. And I said, that's fine. I'm out there too, whatever. I'm glad because I'm like, yeah, I don't. And then my girlfriend had gone on a date with him and I didn't know that either. So I'm like, this world's just too small.
That's.
I said, nope, not a match. Sorry.
Not a match. Very interesting.
But he didn't look like his photo and I didn't FaceTime him. You know, he was older and heavier and shorter than what he presented on the app.
And that's catfishing. That's like when you don't put up the right stuff. I always say, put up the true photos of yourself. Try not to put filters on them. And
I'm guilty of filters. I like my filters, though, but I know. I have some.
Listen, if you're going to touch yourself up a little bit, that's fine. But just like you said earlier, especially on the guy side, if you put up pictures and then when you meet them in real life, they don't look anything like their pictures. It's just a waste. You wasted 3 days of texting and talking and whatever, and then you wasted that hour and a half that you drove there to meet them. And so, but that goes back to doing the video call. If you did the video call, you would have seen that he was big, heavy, and whatever. So,
yeah, I don't know. So, I'm at that point now. I might just go off it again, give it a break. And try to do the old-fashioned way. But I got to go to, different locations where I can find the high-quality man that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where that is exactly, if it's at a fundraising event or a mixer of some type. But I've figured out he's not going to be at the local bar.
Yeah. I of course, being an alcohol in recovery, I don't go to bars. But there's a lot of social events. I play pickleball. And I play tennis mostly, but I got into pickleball because they have social pickleball events.
I love it.
Your local club pickleball courts, they have 2 to 4 on Saturday afternoons and nobody knows anybody. And I have met some great women there and exchanged phone numbers and none went anywhere, but it's a great start.
I live right next door to the National Pickleball Center. So I'm there all the time too. And I was actually thinking about planning my own event, a Dink and Date.
There you go.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Why not?
I don't know.
All right, so now let's circle back to the narcissism. On these apps, is your radar up and paying attention? Is there any way to spot a narc?
Definitely. Like if you see a guy in his bio or description where he's just angry at women.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been hurt in the past. And again, it's not his fault. He's the victim. Run for the hills.
I tell my audience this and everybody, your bio should be positive and happy. And if you're bashing somebody in your dating profile, it's not a good way to start. Happy, be positive, and guys, smile. Not enough people smile in their apps. So,
but then I also see in a lot of guys' bios, drama free. I want drama free, like. It makes me wonder, what kind of drama have they gone through? And are they the ones creating the drama? I don't know.
Yeah. Especially if they're a narcissist, they could be the one initiating the drama.
Because a narcissist projects what they're doing. So they'll accuse you of cheating or they'll accuse you of creating the drama, but really they're the ones doing it. So, it's
interesting.
Yeah.
So how are your kids doing?
My kids are all great, but it was a real struggle for them. It was World War IV zone in my house. And he used the children as weapons. And he continues to use them as weapons. Every holiday, he takes them on these amazing trips so they're not with me. He talks bad about me to the children. It's hard, but the kids know I was the ones who raised them.
Did
I'm always going to be that loving mom, but he's the man with the money, you know? Buys.
When you got divorced, like I think you said it was 4 years.
Seven.
The children were over 18?
No, I had them one in college, one in high school, and one in junior high.
So did he get visitation rights?
Yeah, and actually, I didn't even fight him over that. I wanted, when he did his interrogatories, he couldn't even answer one question about his children. He had never been to a doctor, never been to a teacher conference. No. You know, everything was about his career, but he was a fun dad. When we went on vacations, he was fun. He was great. He was the provider, you know, of the family, but he was a detached parent. So when we were going through the divorce, I didn't even fight him. I said, I want joint custody. I want him to spend time with our children. I want him to see what it's like to be a dad.
Yeah.
And then he was fighting me for full custody, saying I was crazy. And we, you know, that's when we went through the psych evals and, you know, and they realized, ooh, yeah.
But I think somewhere hidden in there was a question that I was probably dancing around. Do you think that when he had custody of the kids or was with the kids that he was planting bad thoughts about mom?
Always.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. I'm crazy. I'm delusional. I'm an alcoholic. You know, anything they can think of.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It's sad. You know, I really encourage people try not to talk bad about your spouse. I mean, the kids don't need to hear it. It just hurts them.
Take me back to the year. You said you took a year off. So after the divorce was final and you said you didn't date for a year and you shouldn't. Nobody, especially after 20 something. That's what happened to me. The woman that I dated had ended a 20-year marriage because the husband cheated on her. And within months, she was on a dating app. Right away, this was a red flag because she sat on my couch and complained about how her husband cheated on her and how she was Miss Universe from the country she was from, you know, 25 years ago. So you shouldn't be dating either side, husband, male or female, after a long-term marriage. Take me through the year that you were recovering, you were grieving, you were bouncing back. How was that for you?
Well, the story is a little different there because I'd gone through my divorce. And then 2 days after my divorce was final, my ex was fired for, it's sealed by the courts. But from what I heard, it was multiple sexual harassment cases at the company.
Of course, yeah.
So our name, you know, it was a small community and it disgraced our family. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed for him. I was embarrassed for me. And I, like I said, I was a shell of the person I was. So my self-confidence was at an all-time low. I was like, who would love me? I mean, I really needed to work on myself. And I was, you know, writing my book, but I was still going back to court because all of a sudden now that he got fired, he cashed everything out. He wouldn't pay stuff for the kids. So I was still going back to court all the time. And I had a personal protection order against him. Because he was stalking me and harassing me. It was just, it wasn't a good time for me to date. I really needed to focus on being healthy and moving forward. And then when I finally did go on a date and I started going on the dating apps, it's funny that you say that. One guy said, you know, how long have you been divorced? And I said, a year. And he's like, nope. And I said, what? And he goes, I won't date anybody that's newly divorced because you guys all have so much baggage and stuff you need to work through. And at the time, I'm like, no, I'm ready to start dating. I think I'm good to go. I wasn't.
No.
In hindsight, I wasn't. You know, I really had to get to that place in my life where I understood who I was and embraced myself and learned to love myself again, you know, that self-love. And then, so I always say to people, I don't want to talk about, in which I'm doing today, but my year of surviving, I want to talk more about my year of thriving and moving forward and not looking back. Because you want to be able to bring something healthy into a relationship, not a bunch of resentment and bitter and anger. And you just have to be in a good place to date again, I think.
Yeah. I don't know the exact numbers, but for every 10 years you're married, there's supposed to something like 6 months of healing or a year. Sure. So if you've been married for 20, 30, 40 years, they tell you it should be 2 or 3 years of healing. And while I agree to that, sometimes I just turned 65. I don't have 3 years to heal. So, no. You know, no. I was like, I don't want to start dating at 70.
The years go faster.
No, but
for me, I needed that time.
Yeah.
We did.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. No. But I didn't leave a marriage. I left a relationship for 3 years, but I still took 2 years off from dating. I just said, I need to, like you said, find yourself, get your self-respect back. All right. Mm-hmm. I have, we're going to begin to wrap up, but I think I have a really important question that maybe you can help some people listening. So for those who are listening that are in a relationship, and we can define that as either a marriage, a domestic, like living together, or a romantic relationship, and they think that their significant other is a narcissist. They hear that, they listen to some of the red flags, or they see it on social media, but they want to get out, but they're afraid to, because a lot of, like you said, a lot of narcissistic will threaten you about trying to leave. What advice can you give to somebody who thinks they're in a toxic, narcissistic relationship? How can they begin to get out? What's the first steps they should take?
If I have a safe place and have a good support group. Like I said, I was stuck in a house. I didn't have money of my own. He wouldn't leave. It was a war zone being in the same home. I wish I could have had a safe place of my own to go to. That was imperative. I mean, he tried to put me in jail. We called the police 10 times. It was just awful. It was terrible.
What would he accuse you of? I mean, I can't imagine calling the police on you and saying, but that's what a narcissist would do.
Well, one time we were going to court for exclusive use of the home. It was, you know, after the police being there 10 times, I said, I can't do this anymore. And I was trying to get him out of the house. And the day we were supposed to go to court, well, the whole weekend I was preparing videos and stuff for my attorney. And he kept coming into the office when I was working on him, trying to see what I was doing. And I caught him outside the window videotaping glass pane windows on the doors. And he was literally filming through the doors, trying to see what I was doing. I had to put sheets over the doors. And at one point, I had to leave the room to go to the bathroom. Well, he went into the office, stood right in front of the desk, and started taking pictures and videos and trying to, like, get a hold of it. And so when I came back in, I knew he was going to do this. I had my phone recording. And I said, please, I asked you to stay out of the office. Couldn't you respect my wishes? And he stood there and he's like, no. And I kept saying, move away. And he wouldn't do it. And then the next thing he goes, oh my God, you just scratched me. And I said, I have my phone in one hand and you can see my other hand right here that I did not touch you. And then he walked out of the office. And I was just like, I know he's up to something. So this is just one time. And sure enough, the morning that we were supposed to go to court, the police showed up. He had filed assault and battery charges against me for scratching him. So he had sent in a picture. He had literally taken like his finger and went like this and scratched his own arm and sent a red mark into the police. But the police that morning went and interviewed him and there was no scratch on his arm. But they still had follow up and come talk to me and they said, you know, there was no visible scratch on his arm. And I'm like, yeah, because I didn't scratch him. But, and then I showed him the video and they just rolled their eyes and then they just, they're like, we're not going to press any charges. But he was trying to put me in jail so I couldn't be in court that day. Yeah. I mean, I can go on and on. He cornered me in my son's bathroom one time. He talked me into going and getting medicine because he didn't know where it was. And I literally, and I put my phone in my pocket recording and it saved me more times than I can count. And he wouldn't move out of the doorway. And in my recording, you can hear me say 12 times, please move out of the way. Please let me out of the bathroom. And he's like, no. And when I raised my voice to him, that mask fell. And he had been drinking. He had gotten back from golfing. He started hitting himself on the forehead. And he started screaming to my children, mommy's beating me. Stop hitting me. You headbutted me. He's 6 foot tall. I'm like fun size. I'm 5 foot two. I can't.
Yeah.
I'm standing there in shock. And I'm like, I am not touching you. I have not headbutted you. And he called the police on me and said I assaulted him. Thank God I had the recording once again.
So that would be a good tip to give somebody to, if you're trying to get evidence, if you're married, put your phone in your pocket and put it on record. So record conversations, record.
Well, legally, you're supposed to have let them know. I mean, like the one time in the office, I had the camera right in his face. The other one I had in my pocket because he actually took me to court and told the judge that my recording was causing the kids anxiety. So the judge said I couldn't record anymore. But then when I was at the police station, the police officer said, if you ever feel that you're in harm's way, do it anyways. And thank God I did because it saved me.
Yeah.
And we did. So I'm not a legal expert, but I'm saying it's better safe.
Check with your local laws. We should say that to the people. Every state has a different law about, you know, recording and who does one party or both parties need to know. But I think in situations where you're physically feeling that you might be harmed, yeah, or the interaction is going to be used against you down the road, absolutely record it.
No, but I never thought the man that I was married to for 30 years would go to those lengths to destroy me. I just never thought it could happen.
What's the expression? When a scared animal is backed into the corner, that, you know, mm-hmm, I don't know what the expression is, but they will come out fighting. And
he did. Yeah. And so, no one won in the end, just the attorneys.
Yeah, nobody, exactly. God. Kimber, tell us where we can find your book, where we can find you. Are you on social media? Anything you'd like to tell the audience? Of course, I'll put all that in the show notes.
Thank you. Yeah, you can find my book, Year of Thorns, What to Expect When Divorcing a Narcissist by Kimber Foster. It's on Amazon. And okay, so is my divorce checklist. So there's a divorce checklist. And you can get this free if they click on the link that you're going to supply to them.
Yep.
You can download a copy for free, because really I want anybody that's in a toxic relationship to be armored with this. And then there's my book. Now, I want to preface, though, I'm not a professional writer. This was my journal that I turned into a book. I wish I had waited till ChatGPT, all that.
Yeah, that would have helped a lot, right?
Yeah, but it's my real story. It's not sugar-coated. It's, you know, my writing could be improved, but it's my truth. And I wrote it, so I hope I can help somebody.
And I'm sure you have, and I'm sure you will.
And I have a blog, too. It's Year of Thorns.
Okay.
www.yearofthorns, and I have some blogs and things in there, too.
And how often do you put that up? Once a month?
As much as I should. But, you know, really, I'm trying to put, like, my years of struggle behind me and try to look forward now.
That's a good idea.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to help others and be happy and positive. And I'm actually, you know, and working on forgiveness and just trying to appreciate all the good times we had and the three beautiful kids I have and just being a better person so I can meet somebody new.
Good. Good for you. Kimber Foster, thank you so much for joining me today. You're a wealth of knowledge and you're beautiful, and I wish you the best of luck. And hopefully somebody will have heard this and you will help. If you can help one person today.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
I would like to thank Kimber Foster so much for stopping by. Never can you have too many narcissistic stories, perspectives coming from different people. I covered narcissism a lot in season one and season two, but just like they're on a spectrum. And so even I, you know, I've been called a narcissist and I've had to reflect on that over the years, except that the difference is that I have empathy for many, many people. So one of the basic foundations of narcissism is no empathy. So, but anyway, Kimber, thank you so much. And all of her information will be in the show notes, and her checklist for getting divorced will be also down in the show notes. So you can pick up a free copy for yourself. And if you're enjoying the show, I ask you to not only link, follow, subscribe, and hit that like button, but to also maybe leave a review on Apple and Spotify if you're listening on those platforms. Pass this show on to somebody else. I also have a Buy Me a Cup of Coffee link in the show notes. I could use a donation, folks. Been 2 years since this podcast launched. Might be over that by now. And I am not making anything on this podcast. So I could use your help, really. If you're enjoying this at all, even just a donation, you'd be surprised how many. If each one of you left $1 or $5, and you would pay my expenses for the month. Anyway, thank you for listening. And don't forget to check out my other two podcasts, Cultimatum and The Weekend Rant. And I'm about to do a weekend rant now. And it'll be out the same week as this episode is. So do check it out if you want to hear me rant. I got a doozy for you this week, folks. Hey, listen, have a great one. Enjoy the summer. The heat wave is here. Go to the beach, go to the lakes, go to the mountains, go wherever you go to cool off and have fun. But have fun. Until next time, ciao.